Welcome to SCOTUSCast, Tribal Sovereign Immunity Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On April 25th, 2017, the Supreme Court decided Lewis v. Clark. Petitioners Brian and Michelle Lewis were driving on a Connecticut interstate when they were struck from behind by a vehicle driven by respondent William Clark, a Mohegan Tribal Gaming Authority employee, who was transporting Mohegan Sun Casino patrons. The Lewises sued Clark in his individual capacity in state court. Clark moved to dismiss for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, arguing that because he was an employee of the Gaming Authority, an arm of the Mohegan tribe entitled to sovereign immunity, and was acting within the scope of his employment at the time of the accident, he was similarly entitled to sovereign immunity against suit. He also argued in the alternative that he should prevail because the Gaming Authority was bound by tribal law to indemnify him. The trial court denied Clark's motion, but the Supreme Court of Connecticut reversed, holding that tribal sovereign immunity barred the suit because Clark was acting within the scope of his employment when the accident occurred. It did not consider whether Clark should be entitled to sovereign immunity based on the indemnification statute. By a vote of 8-0, the U.S. Supreme Court reversed the judgment of the Supreme Court of Connecticut and remanded the case. In an opinion by Justice Sotomayor, the court held that, 1. In a suit brought against a tribal employee in his individual capacity, the employee, not the tribe, is the real party in interest, and the tribe's sovereign immunity is not implicated. And 2. An indemnification provision cannot, as a matter of law, extend sovereign immunity to individual employees who would otherwise not be protected. Justice Sotomayor's majority opinion was joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Kennedy, Breyer, Alito, and Kagan. Justices Thomas and Ginsburg filed opinions concurring in the judgment. Justice Gorsuch took no part in the consideration or decision of this case. To discuss the case, we have Zachary Price, who is Associate Professor at University of California Hastings College of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Price.
This case, of course, did not involve the famous explorers, Lewis and Clark, but the name is perhaps somewhat appropriate because the case did involve a question about our country's troubled relationship with the native peoples who lived here originally. The case involved a question about the extent of Native American tribes' sovereign immunity from lawsuits in state or federal courts. I'll say more in a minute about what sovereign immunity is and how it applies to Native American tribes and other governments, but the basic takeaway the court's holding in Lewis versus Clark was that while Native American tribes themselves have sovereign immunity, that immunity does not extend to suits brought against tribal employees or sued in their individual capacity. And it further held that that is true even if the tribe has agreed to indemnify the employee for the liabilities. That's basically the same rule that applies to state and federal employees. So the court basically assimilated tribal sovereign immunity with general immunity principles on this point. So a bit of background about the case. The case began with a car accident. Defendant in the case is an employee of the Mohegan Tribe of Indians of Connecticut, a federally recognized Native American government. The tribe ran a casino. Defendant was driving some casino patrons home. Unfortunately, in doing so, he apparently rear-ended another vehicle on the highway. The other drivers, the injured parties, sued the tribal employee in Connecticut State Court. And although they brought the suit against the driver as a private individual, the driver moved to dismiss the lawsuit based on the Mohegan tribe's sovereign immunity. In other words, he argued that he was immune from suit from tort liability in state court because he committed the tort while acting as an employee of the tribe, and also as a fallback argument because the tribe had agreed to indemnify him for that sort of liability. So that's the basic setup of the case. Let me give a little background about sovereign immunity and how it works in other contexts. So what is sovereign immunity? Sovereign immunity is the principle that sovereign governments in our polity are generally immune from being sued without their consent. Now, this idea is controversial. It traces its origins to the English common law notion that the king can do no wrong, which some people feel is inappropriate in our republican governmental structure. It also means sometimes that some legal wrongs can have no effective remedy. It's controversial, but it's also very well established in the federal state context and also with respect to Native American tribes. There's an important limitation on sovereign immunity, though, that helps mitigate some of those controversial effects. And that is that in the federal state context, the court had held before Lewis versus Clark that immunity generally does not extend to suits against individual government officers in their personal capacity. So even if you can't sue the state itself, for example, for damages for some tortious or unconstitutional action, you may be able to sue the individual state officer who committed the wrong. Now, how do Native American tribes fit into this picture? So tribes are an often overlooked third sovereign within our country's federalist structure. They've been understood to retain some of the governmental authority they exercised before they were incorporated into the United States. So they're a government, they exercise governmental powers, but at the same time, the Supreme Court has held that the federal government has, quote, plenary power to restrict tribal government authority. So the basic structure of federal Indian law provides that tribes hold sovereign governmental authority, except insofar as Congress has taken that authority away. The court has applied sovereign immunity principles to Native American governments that track that basic structure of federal Indian law more generally. So as the court explained in a 2014 decision, quote, among the core aspects of sovereignty that tribes possess, subject to congressional action, is the common law immunity from suit traditionally enjoyed by sovereign powers. So in other words, as a default rule, tribes possess the same sovereign immunity from suit that state and federal governments do. Congress can override that immunity pursuant to its plenary power. If it does so clearly, the tribe itself can also waive its immunity in the same way that state or federal governments can. But absent those things happening, the tribe has sovereign immunity just like other governments within our system. Now, also in prior decisions, the court held that this tribal sovereign immunity extends not just on-reservation governmental actions by the tribe, but also to the tribe's commercial activities, and even if those activities are occurring off the reservation controlled by the tribe. So that's all the background case law going into Lewis. The court basically took all of that as a given going into the case. So if the injured party in Lewis's Clark had sued the tribe, then tribal sovereign immunity would have applied and barred the lawsuit, even though the tort in question happened off the reservation, involved a commercial activity of running a casino rather than some more quintessentially governmental activity. So that's the state of the law about tribal sovereign immunity. Of course, in Lewis, the plaintiffs, the injured parties, didn't sue the tribe. They instead sued the driver in his personal capacity. So the key issue in the case is whether the tribe's sovereign immunity could also shield this employee from personal liability for the accident. And the court, as I said, it held that the answer is no. And you should see now that in reaching that conclusion, it's basically assimilating the law of tribal sovereign immunity on that question to the law that applies to state and federal officers. So as the court explained in the majority opinion by Justice Sotomayor, quote, in the context of lawsuits against state and federal employees or entities, courts look to whether the sovereign is the real party in interest to determine whether sovereign immunity bars the suit. So in other words, if the lawsuit is seeking recovery, seeking a judgment against the sovereign itself or against the government official in their official capacity, then the immunity applies. If the suit instead seeks recovery from an individual in their personal capacity, sovereign immunity does not come into play. Now, that may or may not be a sensible line to draw in general, but the bottom line in Lewis versus Clark is that the court saw no reason to draw any different line in the tribal context. To accept the employee's argument, the court explained, would, quote, extend sovereign immunity for tribal employees beyond what common law sovereign immunity principles would recognize for either state or federal employees. The court, in essence, saw no justification for drawing that sort of distinction. So that's the core holding, the first piece of the case. As a fallback, the tribal employee also argued that the tribe's indemnification agreement should bring tribal sovereign immunity into play. So in other words, he argued as a fallback and alternative that the tribe should be considered the real party in interest in this case for immunity purposes because it had agreed to indemnify him for most torts committed in the course of his employment. Now, this actually appeared to be a question of first impression, not only in the tribal sovereign immunity context, but with respect to sovereign immunity more generally. But the court rejected the employee's argument. It held that, quote, the critical inquiry is who may be legally bound by the court's adverse judgment, not who will ultimately pick up the tab. So again, because the lawsuit in Lewis was formally seeking to hold the individual driver responsible for individual wrongdoing, the tribe's choice to indemnify him did not, quote, somehow convert the suit against him into a suit against the sovereign. So just to sum up, the court held in Lewis that Native American tribes have sovereign immunity, but that immunity does not bar private suits against tribal employees who are sued in their individual capacity. And that's true even if the tribe has agreed to indemnify those employees for the liability in question. Decision, I should say, was unanimous, except that Justices Thomas and Ginsburg wrote brief concurrences, noting that they would have deemed tribal sovereign immunity inapplicable in this case because the conduct was off-reservation commercial conduct involving a non-member of the tribe. So that illustrates, I think, that there has been controversy in the past about tribal sovereign immunity and its proper extent in general. Those issues have divided the court previously, but in this case, the court seemed taking as a given that tribal sovereign immunity exists and extends to this context. The justices seem to have found it relatively straightforward to assimilate tribal sovereign immunity law to general principles about federal and state employees with respect to whether employees can be sued in their individual capacity.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.fedsoc.org/multimedia.